In due course, the irregulars descended two more levels, after which Canis relaxed an iota as it became clear that she and her companions finally had a cellar pretty much to themselves. Despite their numbers, the vassals of Manoth and the Sulmenite artificers hadn't filled every underground laboratory and manufactory, and it made sense that few of them had opted for the bottommost cellar. The deeper a person worked, the more trouble it would be to haul supplies and equipment down and the products of their labor up. No one had bothered to kindle candles, torches, or lanterns where nobody at all had set up shop. Only a scattering of old but still half-functional alchemical lamps in wall sconces provided a trace of sickly light. When even that failed, Eilish raised his hand. Blue phosphorescence glimmered into existence around him and flowed along with him thereafter. He stopped at a doorway at the end of a hall. Beyond was a cramped room with a modest kiln and a miscellany of dusty glassware on the work table, everything shrouded in layers of spiderweb. The chamber looked like a space where some long-forgotten student might have ground away at his assignments, and not a gifted, favored student at that. Canis stationed herself in the doorway to keep an eye on the corridor. Her companions moved deeper inside the room. Milo went all the way to the back wall and swiped away grime, revealing carvings. Her Laylee's gunmage training included the fundamentals of alchemy, and Canis recognized what amounted to a reference chart listing the elements, fire, water, mercury, and the rest, the principles, hotness, coldness, dryness, and moistness, and other basic information. Milo pressed four of the symbols in succession. The chart hitched outward from the wall like a door coming unlatched. Unlike the substantial blocks around it, it was a panel designed to conceal the hollow space behind. Milo pulled the panel all the way open. Eilish's blue glow washed over leather-bound folios, smaller volumes, and sheaves of yellowed parchment bound with string. Here and there, ribbons stuck from between pages to mark somebody's place. The little alchemist picked up a book with a respect at odds with his normal attitude. Ordinarily, Eilish would have made his way across a filthy, cluttered room with gingerly distaste, but he paid the spiderwebs and such no mind as he hurried up beside Milo to examine a second volume. Though not an alchemist, he possessed a lively curiosity that made him interested in all manner of things.
Bag them. You can read them when we're safe.
Quickly, but carefully, lest they damage their old and possibly delicate prizes, he and Milo started filling two of the sacks they and the other irregulars had brought along for the purpose. There were a fair number of books and parchment bundles, but not so many that it would be awkward to carry them all, although Canis didn't like having sacks in both hands. She would have preferred that at least one hand was free to draw a pistol, but she'd put up with it because she had to. Milo closed the panel on the now-empty cache, and then the intruders tramped back the way they'd come. When they reached the point where there were other light sources, Eilish extinguished his magical phosphorescence. Shortly thereafter, the intruders returned to corridors wide and straight enough to facilitate the movement of supply carts and mechanica, and then the stairs they'd descended appeared ahead. Unfortunately, individuals in armor were coming down. Canis looked around. She and her companions might be able to hide in one of the empty workrooms to either side, but if they were caught, it would be difficult to convince their discoverers that they were genuine clergy with legitimate business in the depths.
Stay calm. We'll bluff our way through.
Canis thought it was the better choice until the soldiers came into view. In the lead stalked a temple flame guard. The haft of a flame guard's long spear contained a reservoir of an alchemical compound that heated the point blazing hot in combat, and his was already glowing red. Next glided a wiry, shaven-headed allegiant in the Order of the Fist, a man who bore no weapons or armor because his combat discipline didn't require them. And behind him descended a fellow bearing insignia like the Exemplar who jeered at Eilish's rhymes. It was the mismatched nature of the group that Canis found most disquieting. She imagined someone discovering the unconscious sentry, despite the irregulars' attempt to hide him, hurrying through the ground floor of the fortress and collecting whomever he found up and about at this late hour to form a search party. Still, it was now too late to hide. The mercenaries could only proceed with their lies.
All praise the lawgiver. Do any of you know where Maya Ja has her laboratory? We have supplies for her.
She hefted the sack in her right hand. The first men down the stairs scrutinized the mercenaries. Their expressions were uncertain. Plainly, they feared something was amiss somewhere in Thunderhead Fortress, but they didn't know what or where, and every crusading soldier treated priests with deference. Canis thought that Colby's matter-of-fact demeanor just might allay their suspicions. But then the rest of the Menite men-at-arms came down the steps with their own priestess, and presumably current leader, bringing up the rear. Though she wore a hooded and Menefix emblazoned robe like the Irregulars' disguises, the most arresting part of her regalia was an iron half-mask. It was somewhat like those of the Scrutators, but somehow gave the impression of being fashioned not merely to efface individual identity, but the fact of humanity itself. Its maker had done his best to make it featureless, with the jut of nose and contours of cheekbones buried beneath smooth curves and gray lenses of nearly the same hue as the surrounding metal concealing the eyes. She bore a long brass and steel torch connected to a fuel tank belted to her waist. Together, the mask and torch identified her as a member of the Reclaimant Order. According to Colby, such clergy supposedly took a vow of silence to help obliterate all sense of self and become flesh and blood extensions of Menoth's will. Inwardly, Canis winced. According to rumor, reclaimers possessed formidable mystical abilities, and even if the stories were exaggerated, such fanatics were likely difficult to fool. Striding to the fore of the search party, the reclaimer turned her head, and even though Canis couldn't see the priestess's eyes, she felt the sudden force of her gaze. Like her companions, Canis had been born into a Morrowan family, but she'd given her truest loyalty to her country, to the Resistance, and once her faith in that died, perhaps other belief withered with it. At any rate, she hadn't troubled herself with matters of religion in a long time. Yet abruptly, she trembled with the urge to fall to her knees before the reclaimer and confess the deception she and her companions had practiced against the temple and the blasphemous theft they were presently committing. But there was a stubborn part of her that rejected the feeling as false, an attempted violation from outside. She steeled herself against it, and after a moment, it faded. She glanced at her companions. To her relief, they showed no signs of groveling and confessing either. Colby did bow her head in a gesture of respect, however.
The Creator keep you. I was just telling the soldiers here that...
The reclaimer stabbed her finger at the Irregulars. The meaning of the gesture was unmistakable, and the Crusaders moved to attack. Canis dropped her sacks. Any brittle documents inside would just have to take their chances, and snatched for her holdout pistols. As they cleared her pockets, she felt a flicker of perverse satisfaction. Just as she'd warned, events were demonstrating that coming to Lael had been a bad idea.